Well, good morning. How was the rest of Inside Out last night?
We didn't finish it. We have like 25 minutes left, which is fine. Oh my God, the construction's gonna be a thing, but you know what? This is real
Oh, yeah.
life.
Quinn, you have a porta potty outside your house. That's a new installation. You didn't tell me. That's
Weirdly,
so
I don't even
exciting.
think it's my construction you're hearing because you know the house that's getting built behind us is like the loud thing.
Wait, are you having construction on your house?
Yeah, just for safety.
Wait, what do you mean? Is like the is the foundation crumbling?
Well,
Is
you
the
saw
house
the
gonna
porta potty. It's for the
I saw the porta
guys.
pot. Well, I know it's for the guys,
It's
but
for
I
the
didn't know if it was
guys.
for the apartment building next
What if I
door
was
or
like,
if it
we
was for your
decided to add a
house.
porta potty to the yard? It's
We
just
thought it would be
sometimes
a
you don't want to
fun.
go up the stairs.
You know what's nice about it is actually Halloween is right around the corner, and I feel like having a porta potty on the sidewalk during Halloween actually is really convenient for the neighborhood.
So true.
Wait, what are you doing at your house? I actually did not know this. I thought that porta potty was
Oh,
for
you didn't
the
see this?
scaffolding that just exists permanently next to
You
your
didn't
in the
see
apartment
our
building.
scaffolding? We also have scaffolding in our front yard.
You know what it is? Can I tell you?
And
I
we
thought it was a
also,
part of the Halloween.
Halloween,
I
and
thought it
we
was part of
also have a
Halloween.
huge pile of trash in the yard. It's like very intense that you didn't notice what's going on. When I say
That's
huge pile of
so
trash, it's like a
crazy.
pile of trash taller than me.
That's okay. You know what? Can I tell you? I noticed Sam the bartender before I noticed the trash and the scaffolding, and I was like, 'cause there's
Fascinating.
Quinn. Quinn has like a lot of Halloween decor. You know, she's got a big tall bartender. There's like a little skeleton dog. There's just like a lot of like you're like, "Oh, it's a spooky." And so for some reason the trash and the scaffolding, I was like, I saw past it. I saw past, which is actually indicative of like me as a dater. You know, I just see past the trash.
It
I see
definitely is trashed.
Oh,
And
so wait, what are you
it's
doing?
no, it's just that the front porch, like the top, is getting redone because it's otherwise it might cave in and kill somebody.
Now, who would you want it to kill the least in your house?
Me.
Not your kids? Wow, selfish. Call DCFS. Wow, Quinn would sacrifice her kids to herself. You heard it here first and truly, directly, creepily.
My kids, they're the
But
cutest
which
people.
one? I'm just
I know,
kidding. I
Sophie's
love them.
choice, right? They are so cute. And my
You had to
favorite is
cave in.
they are like when I look over and they're like hugging each other. Oh God. Then I'm like dead.
They're so cute. The
They're
best is
so cute.
I saw last night I came over and I dropped off some fish and I was chatting with the kids and I was Griffin was like, "It was Koa's birthday this weekend." And I was like, "Yeah, Griff, I was there." He goes, "I remember you." Felt like a little bit of
He's like,
a
you
wicked
sure
moment.
did. You sure did. It was
That
a
sounds like a
really
he
successful
genuinely
birthday.
remembered. It was a really fun birthday. Matt went full as here's my
Full dad.
outsider perspective. Matt went 100% all in on the dad energy. Matt, I walked up there and Matt was leading the troops in Capture the Flag in such an intense way. It was so
Yeah, he
funny. It
definitely
was
was
so fun.
explaining the rules for like 35 minutes. And I was like, let's see how it goes. But
I
it
heard
went great.
it went great. And then the last, I played one. Quinn and I, we played one round as like grown-ups versus kids and failed miserably. I thought I had a good strategy and I went in too fast. And that's, you know, we just were, I'm not as fast as or agile as the
I
kids. Would
think
you
I
believe it?
realized, though, why it's such a good game is that, at no point necessarily does one team feel like it's really obvious that another team is winning. So everyone's morale stays really high since there's not like points being scored. It's like we're just still playing. And it's not a feeling of like, oh, we're losing ever. Like the kids really like that. And then I also really like it because there's so many different things you can do. You can play the game and be a person that never crosses into the other zone because you don't want to get chased. And just decides to try to tag people. You know, when you're in jail, you're still having fun. You're not out. You're like yelling to your teammates. And I just think it's a really, really good game for that reason. And Koa had so much fun. Everybody did.
everybody had a great time. It was a great party. Braden said, told me that Koa was like, so it's my birthday, so I get to win, right? Does that what?
Yeah. Koa had a lot of problems at the beginning, understanding how this would go well for her. She was like, do I get to, she was doing a thing where she was like, can I pick everyone that's on my team? And we were like, no. And she was like, oh God, I already told so many kids at school that they get to be on my team. It's like, they're not going to be worried about it. Like, they're going to have fun. So,
you know, it is so fun. The birth order is so fun. I do feel like she definitely, like, she's, there's so many things I love about Koa. One of many is she likes lighting in a very specific way. So you'll be in a room and the lights will be too bright. And so she'll like turn them down and she'll be like, this is better, guys. And arguably, a lot of times she's right. Almost always right, which is the problem, which I think is the perennial problem of the oldest child. And Quinn, I think you can speak to this.
I'm always right.
I know. As the youngest here,
you
I'm
must
like,
be
I
always just... wrong. Is that what happens with the youngest? Tell us about it.
Let me pull up a couch and let me get my therapist on the line. I think that's like the worst part about being the younger sibling is when your oldest sibling is right. It's not that I want you to be wrong. It's that I want to be right too. Do you know what I mean?
It's,
I think
just
there's
not
a difference
room for you here. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. If you wait at the door, though, there might be an extra party bag. I didn't do party bags, by the way, but
no.
I tell you
crap.
What,
nobody
I didn't know.
Fucking crap.
You know what? It was like kind of an experiment. I bought. I'll tell you guys, this is really fascinating content. I'll tell you what I got at the Costco for the party. I got assorted chips, pirate's booty, cheese, crackers, and dip. Those were the foods, and I can say we didn't need the dip. Cheese got half eaten.
Can I say an open dip at a park? Is a bold, if I may be so bold to say, it's a bold, especially a cream-based dip, Quinn, okay. Which you gotta, I just think, right. I would go hummus, or I think a cream-based open vat of spinach artichoke.
You're right. That was the wrong move. We were talking about what we learned from this. I brought home, all the juice boxes got drunken.
The kids were fucking on those juice boxes.
Yeah, I should have gotten two juice boxes. That's a lesson. I should have gotten two boozy seltzers. I got one thing of booze seltzer and one thing of not booze seltzer. And the booze seltzer was gone pretty fast and furious.
I didn't have any booze because I was pretty hungover from the night before, if I'm being so bold, so honest, so frank.
I think a lot of the parents, whether they were hungover or not, I don't know where they were
they
coming
rallied.
From. But they showed up to play Capture the Flag, and they wanted a little spike in that seltzer, including Koa's third grade teacher, who, in a surprise move, lives in New Jersey, showed up. You always invite the teacher. You never think they'll show. She showed up in the park. She has a toddler and lives in New Jersey, showed up in the park and was like, happy birthday, Koa. And I was like, what? And I was like, do you want a spiked seltzer? And she was like, of course. And I was like, this is awesome.
So you got to like know her on a personal level?
Yeah. And she's so cool. And I really like her. And I thought it was also just like, she's new to the school this year. And what a cool move to show up at the kids' party. I was like,
for sure,
you rule. And then it was her birthday this week, so we gotta return the favor a little bit and get her a little balloon, a little gift certificate.
It's a little bit, that's not a tit for tat, but you want to meet her energy with your own.
I like her, yeah. And I was psyched about it. And Koa felt like a celebrity, you know. Koa was like, my teacher came, and I have pictures of them hugging. It's a very cute. So, stellar weekend.
I also will say, I think Griffin had a really good time at the party. I think Griffin played so hard, and he kept holding his pants up while running and then just absolutely going feral and screaming. And I just watched him, and it was some of my favorite things because he just was like, he was running and his face gets really,
really
intense.
Angry looking. And I love like that angry really, focused face. It's so funny.
And he also doesn't know the rules, but he's like, I'm winning. And then he thought like when the adults, we were kids versus adults, he was like, we're win. And then he became an adult. He didn't understand, but it didn't matter. And for that, I applaud. And for that, I want that for me.
Yeah.
I love.
Yeah.
I love.
He was having a lot.
I have no notes.
He was in the schoolyard the other day and heard the word penalty because there were some kids playing soccer. So one of his new hobbies is when he runs, he will just yell penalty. We're all like, what?
What's going
penalty?
On?
Penalty.
I like him. I think, you know,
he thinks it's just a rally cry, you know?
Which, you know what?
Maybe it is a little bit.
Who's to say it isn't? Who's to say it isn't? As a fellow youngest, who's to say it isn't? Let us be right sometimes.
All
let
right.
us scream
I'll let
penalty.
You have, I'll let you have penalty.
Let us have penalty. Let us have it. Let us have it. Let us not know the rules, but still be competitive. Let us run while pulling our pants up because they might fall down. In case anybody, I just got to tell you, I'm loving every week. I've been going to this ballet class and it makes me so happy.
Yeah.
And so yesterday I just ordered leotard tights and a skirt and I'm really excited.
Yes.
I'm really excited. And then,
why not a tutu? Go all the way.
Well, here's the thing about a tutu is actually you have
it's
to be really
too,
aligned.
Too much.
No, a skirt is cuter, I think. I mean, it's like you want to like look at, you're like, oh my God, I'm center stage and I'm just in my leotard. The fun thing was is finding a leotard that is for big boobs. That is a tough,
kind of got to do journey. Like almost a high neck on that or something.
No.
Yeah, you do.
It's yeah, you do. Oh my God. Yesterday, this man I'm dating looked at me and he was like, "You never talk about true crime with me." And so I started telling the story and he's like, "What did she look like? Why I need to go on a journey." And so he put on documentary of the story I'm about to tell. And it had some really helpful information. So because this is a more fleshed out story, we can thank this fucking man I'm dating.
Well, here's the thing. Probably it's going to be a better story now is a fact. Like, right? Like, it's like he made you watch the documentary. You didn't want to. And now you're like, well, this will be a little better.
And that's, I think that to me is the most, and you know what? He's
the
oldest.
That's the most frustrating thing of
all. Okay, I got this information from the New York Times, Wikipedia, and the documentary Crazy Love. I want to introduce you to Bert Pugosh. He's a New York lawyer, and I got to tell you guys, I don't think he's a good guy. So, spoiler alert, there's that.
Careful. Proceed with
careful.
Caution.
Proceed with caution. Do not become attached to him, okay? I don't think you're going to like him by the end of this. He was born in 1927. A little bit about his background is in the documentary. The other thing about this documentary that I watched, Crazy Love, is they interview him in the documentary. And so all of the stories you get are from the horse's mouth. And I have to just proceed with caution again. Is this guy trustworthy? Let's find out. You decide. I'll tell you the story and you decide. But he's like, you know, I had a terribly doting mother. Like she was very attentive, but also she beat him. He talks about how his mother bathed him until he was 10 or 12 years old. That's too old to be bathed by your mom. Okay. That's too old. If you're still bathing at 10, 12, I mean, I don't know. I don't have a kid. Okay. His mom would call him a book learned idiot. And so he grew up and he became a lawyer. He was a successful negligence lawyer. People called him an ambulance chaser. They said his practice was a negligence mill. He was a professional adjuster. But he was in it for the money. He was in it to score big. And he made a very decent living. It's September 1957. And Bert is in his Cadillac. He's driving with his friend in the Bronx. And lo and behold, this beautiful woman, Linda, walks by. Bert slams on the brakes and he's like, holy shit. That is the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. She's gorgeous. She looks like Elizabeth Taylor. She has these big, brown, beautiful eyes, gorgeous eyelashes. And he's like, I have to have her. And so he gets out of the car. And he's like, hey, I want your number. And we're interviewing Linda now in the documentary. And she's like, I gave him my number just to push him off, which I think any woman knows that game. You're like, here, just take my number. I don't want to deny you in person. Here, I'll avoid you later with some distance. By the time she gets home, there are a dozen roses waiting for her. And what she comments, she's like, Bert, not a good looking guy. Okay. Not a good looking dude. However, being wined and dined, being courted, being wooed is a very fun feeling, right? This guy, because he's an ambulance chaser, this guy's got a lot of money. In fact, like, but also, guy's kind of a creep. Apparently, he's like sleeping with his secretary. He might be sleeping with some of his clients. At one point, his secretary talks about how she gets in a car accident and he's like, you got to go to the hospital so that he can have a case for her later. And later, the secretary's like, I mean, I don't know. I don't think he used me that much. Anyway, so Bert is like wooing this 10-year his junior, Linda. And Linda's like, you know what? He's rich. This is kind of fun. And she's talking to her parents about it. And her family's like, you know what? He's rich. Have fun. A little bit about Linda. She's 21 years old at the time. She had a tough upbringing. Her dad left her when she was 4 years old. So she went to go live with her aunt because her family really couldn't take care of her. So she doesn't have a lot of familial security. She's very popular because of her looks. And so when this guy starts courting her, Linda's like, he's not that attractive, but he's a professional man. And grandma's like, listen, if he's better looking than the devil, we're going to call him hot because he's rich. Okay. So we know we got our sights set on a comfortable life for good old Linda. He apparently also produces films. He owns a nightclub. He's got a caddy. He's got a four-seater plane. Linda recalls that she would leave her house in the morning to go catch the bus to go to work. And he would pull up in his Cadillac and be like, do you want a ride? And she was like, you know what? Sure. This beats taking the bus. Okay. In the documentary, they were like, he fell head over heels in love with Linda. Linda was impressed by him. This is the response, which I like. She was impressed. At the nightclub that he owned, whenever he would walk in with Linda, the band was instructed to play the song Linda. So every time she walked in, there was
what
like...
What is that song?
It doesn't matter. You don't care. You're not going to
sing
it. No, but
I want to hear you make up a song called Linda.
Any Patreon joiners named Linda? It's like, Linda, you are a star. Linda, you are a... My heart, I love you, Linda. Linda, Linda, Linda also means pretty in Spanish. Linda.
Nailed it. That's definitely what... It wouldn't be weird if that was the song, if then you heard it and that was literally the song. And you were like, wow, creepy.
Well, at one point in the documentary, Bert's singing Linda. And apparently he also like had a ukulele and would sing it to her. Like this guy. And also he had the worst facial hair. He is trash.
Like this? So, did he have this line?
At one point it was just, it's like he dipped his chin and then had a mustache. So bad. Guys, I know you like want to do a lot of fun things with your facial hair. Keep it simple, stupid. K-I-S-S. So at this point, grandma is kind of changing her tune. She's like, this guy is really successful. He's got a lot of money. There's no fucking way he's single. There's no way he's single. And so grandma does a little investigation. We love a gossip. We love a nosy queen. And Linda will find out that he is in fact married. Can you believe it? And oh, okay. Sorry. I thought it'd be a surprise. And so Linda's like, well, I'm going to confront him. Meanwhile, Bert finds out that she knows that he's married. And he's like, I know the best defense is a good offense. And so he's like, I'm married. He like admits it to her. And so she's like, the wind gets out of her sails. And he's like, yeah, I'm married, but I'm going through a divorce. And his story is that he was with his wife for 3 years. They never had sex. They didn't do anything. And she came to him and she said, everybody thinks we're sleeping together. And so he married her for her honor. Eye roll. He said he didn't want to marry her. They did end up having a child. And sadly, their child was born and was severely disabled. Could not sit up, could not talk, it was very hard. So he's telling this to Linda and Linda's like, listen, I'm not getting involved with a married man. You call me when you get a divorce. He's like, great, cool. Next day, rings her up and he's like, guess what? I got a divorce. Do you want to see the papers? And she's like, yeah, I do want to see the papers. So he shows her the papers and she writes down the case number and she's like, thank you. Okay, these papers say that you're divorced. Great. Meanwhile, she shares the case number with her grandma. I love this grandma. This grandma is a nosy lady. And she's like, I'm going to see if these really fucking check out. So Linda's still seeing him. She's like, according to him, he's divorced. And she's like, well, aren't we going to get married? And he's like, yes. So they're shopping for houses together, for diamond rings. He's crazy in love. He's desperately wanting to sleep with her. And she's like, no, not until marriage. Hold out, Linda. Meanwhile, stress is sort of looming for him because in the late 50s, there's an ethical investigation about him fee splitting. So his law practice is in question. He's drinking a lot. Linda recalls them going to the beach together and she runs into a guy she dated and Bert flew into a jealous rage and he was convinced she was having sex with him. And she was like, I'm still a virgin. And she was defending herself so much that she ended up going to the hospital for a doctor to check to make sure that she was still a virgin. And she was. Just a lot of coercive control. It's not a fucking thing. At the same time, it's not a thing. It doesn't exist. However, she was able to be like, see? And he was like, okay, I guess. Meanwhile, mom and grandma are taking a look at the divorce case files and they find out that divorce papers were false. And Linda was like, fuck you, I'm out. So she breaks it off with Bert. And Bert's excuse was, well, New York cases take a long time. So I made this because it's basically like I'm getting a divorce. Like, this guy's just really good at lying, coming up with excuses, all that good stuff. So she decides to go with a family friend to Florida for a month. And she's like, I'm getting the hell out of here. I'm going to get getting away from Bert. See ya, sayonara, Sammy. And so she packs up, she goes to Florida, and she meets this really nice guy named Larry Schwartz. They have kind of a fun time together. There's a lot of flirtation. She comes back to New York, and Bert convinces her to come back. So she starts seeing Bert again. And then Linda gets a call from Bert's wife, Francine, and she's like, listen, you can date Bert, but just so you know, woman a woman, I'm never going to give him a divorce.
Wow.
And so she's like, okay, well, Bert, this is not good. We're not going to hang out. No, no, no. And then Bert threatens to kill himself. He gets committed. He starts stalking Linda. And her whole family knows this. So he would hire people to go to her window and throw rocks at her window. She would go to the police. She would cry. She's like, this man is following me. He's making me feel unsafe. And they were like, we can't really do anything. He's a lawyer. Sorry. And so at this point, he's starting to look to hire people to like beat her up so that it would scare her so she would get back with him. She's fucking terrified.
What a hopeless romantic.
And they say chivalry is dead. So at this point, she's scared. Larry Schwartz, the man she met in Florida, gets out of the army and they reconnect in New York and they fall in love and they get engaged. And Bert finds out and he goes fucking nuts. And the harassing, if you believe it, turns worse. He calls Linda and he starts to threaten her with things. We know what this is going to say. If I can't have you, no one else will have you. And when I get through with you, no one else will want you. Again, Bert is like just a vile man. And this guy, Larry Schwartz, is just wanting to get married to Linda. Seems like a healthy choice, Linda. Marry Larry. At one point, Bert talks about waiting for the two of them with a gun and then chickening out because he just couldn't murder someone. The conscience on him. What an upstanding citizen. So he's like, you know what? This is where you hire out. So he hires this other guy and he's like, I need you to go and scare Linda. I don't know the exact instructions that he uses, but it's 1959 and Linda's at home with her mom and she's getting ready. It's a week before her wedding and the doorbell rings and she opens the door and she believes it's a package. It's a gift. She thinks it's from Larry for her engagement. And there's two guys at the door. She opens the door and they throw acid on her. They throw lye on her. She recalls not really being able to contextualize what happened, just that her eyes started burning and she runs to the bathroom. She's soaking them with water. The lie blinds her in one eye and will severely damage the other eye. It is the week of her wedding. She is in the hospital. She is sick. She is put up. She is healing. Fortunately, she survives. However, she's blind in one eye. She will have long-term damage that will eventually lead to her full blindness later in life. Larry, her fiance, comes in. He's like,
is her skin like all burned up too, or
not particularly? Based on what I saw, it was just, I think this lie got in her eye, and I wonder if it has to be like in a orifice or something. I don't know mm-hmm. how that works. So she's in the hospital. She tells Larry, she's like, I'm not going to hold you to it. This commitment you made me, like, I am not the same woman that you agreed to marry. She gives Larry the ring back. Larry's like, no, I'm going to stick with you. And she's like, get out of here. And then she starts to go, you could get hurt. I read an article that Linda was an artist, so this also ruined her art career. Weird. Like, she couldn't see anything. While this is happening, they're looking for the assailants. And the assailants, meanwhile, are blackmailing Bert. Bert is sending her flowers still. He's also apparently committed to buying her a seeing eye dog, because I guess that would appease some of his guilt. Mm-hmm. What the police soon discover, or what the assailants confess, is that Bert paid $2,000 to these men to attack her with lie. Bert is arrested, and his defense is that they were just supposed to beat her up.
What a mensch.
Francine, his wife, leaves him. And true to fashion, in the most narcissistic way, Bert represents himself at his own trial. While he's on trial, he attempts suicide. He cuts his wrists. And he says in this documentary, it's to attempt a mistrial. And in the documentary, he shows the scars. And it's like, fuck you, dude. Like, he didn't try at all. He's shouting, I wish he did. Sorry, I said it. Is that too far?
No, he's a monster.
He's just doing really everything.
Abusive. He's so abusive.
And he gets away with it. You're going to die. The story gets fucking worse. After his attempts, he's shouting, Linda, Linda, I love you. He gets a psychiatrist to label him as a psychopath, which is just a bullshit diagnosis. At his trial, he says he's still in love with her and that he's happy to be a defendant at the trial just to be able to see her, because she has to testify against him at the trial.
That reminds me of the story of Sarah McLachlan, stalker.
Yeah.
Right? Who he like said she stole lyrics from letters he wrote her, but he didn't even really think it. He just wanted to force her to go to trial so he could be in the same room with her.
Yeah. Fucking disgusting. That's what it makes me so mad. And this is what's interesting is, I'm sorry, I said no beginning. I said no sentence there. I said all beginnings of sentences and not a single finish to one of them. I said, So at the trial, he's confessing his love to her, which is just fucking vile. He's his own attorney. So does he get to cross-examine her? I don't totally know. They didn't get into it. But what's interesting is that she is the first real victim impact statement in New York. And so she talks about her experience. She says she wants him dead on the stand. She's like, fuck this guy, rot in jail. He gets 30 years, to which she says that isn't long enough. She wants him again to rot in jail. He is disbarred. He gets 30 years. She goes, you know what? Fuck this. I got to live my life. She goes to Europe. She meets a bunch of guys. She's still a virgin into her 30s. And she says, you know what? Fuck it. She goes, I'm going to fuck them and fool them. So she goes off on a European adventure and she starts sleeping with men, having a good time, loving life. Go off, Linda. Go off. Bert, meanwhile, is in prison. And he, again, so manipulative. He starts like looking at law books and he starts representing people in prison. So he starts making friends with a bunch of people. And while he's in prison, he befriends a defense attorney and he starts writing to Linda. Mm-hmm. And Linda at this time, you know, she, at one point, she had a man who wanted to get married to her, and she had never worn clear glasses around him. She had always worn these, like, fabulous shades. Opaque shades. Yeah. And when she wore clear glasses around him, he changed his mind. You know, like so much of this, like her confidence is wrecked. I just imagine that she feels.
Well, you don't want to marry that fucker anyway.
What do you? Yeah, yeah, for sure, absolutely.
Like, you don't want to marry a guy that's like, oh, that's what you look like. 100%. Hasn't she seen the show Love Is Blind?
100%. However, like this is affecting her, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he ruined everything.
And so Bert now is writing her horribly, yeah. And he manages to weasel his way in. The defense attorney calls Linda and he's like, what would it take for Bert to get you back? And she's like, where's the money? Send me money. Dollar makes me holler.
Buy me back, yeah.
Buy me back. And so he sends her money. Linda decides to go to a psychic, and the psychic is like, he really loves you. And she's like, huh, interesting. I don't know. Maybe I'll dabble. What an interesting prop. The psychic sounds like a hack. And it's 14 years into his sentence. He gets word that he's getting out of jail. When he gets out of jail, he does a bunch of interviews. And in the interviews, he declares his love to Linda and he asks Linda to marry him. This becomes huge news. Newspapers write about it. They're like, man who blinded girlfriend asks her to marry him. And I'm so sorry to report that she ends up meeting with him. And she goes, prison did him good. I guess there was a lot of weight training in prison. I don't know. She gets back with
him.
How
can she tell?
She sees him. He gets out of jail. And
does she see him? I mean, really?
Like, one eye works, kind of.
Okay.
The soft focus of the other eye. She will eventually lose
sight
in that eye.
The irony of him trying to get hot for his girlfriend that he blinded is not lost on me.
I bet. You know what? I don't think this guy was trying to get hot for his girlfriend. I think he was trying to get hot because it made it, like, I don't think this man did anything unless
for
it reflected good
else.
On him. Exactly.
Right.
There's no fucking way. Oh, God. 8 months after his release from jail in 1974, the two of them get married. Linda would later say that marrying him was the best revenge. They end up having no children. Friends talk about going on vacation or like trips with them. And she was like, they fought all the time. Like it just, would you believe it? It didn't seem like the healthiest of relationships.
That's so crazy.
He would later say that the attack on Linda was a neurotic reaction to a terrible situation, which feels fucked.
What a weird way to not fully take any responsibility.
It was a neurotic. So it's a neurotic reaction. It was neurotic. That was crazy to
a
terrible situation.
Neurotic.
It was a terrible situation that I was in. Fuck off. He said the day after he did it, he regretted what he did. He said, if I could undo that, I would. Why don't you ask yourself harder questions? Do you regret it? The day after I did, if I could undo it, I would. What good does
sometimes
that fucking do?
Sometimes I do, you know?
He also said, it's a waste in the sense that I certainly should have devoted my life to something other than destruction. Yeah. Okay. He would also later go on to say that their relationship was a storybook romance. What fairy tale does it remind you of? I don't
know. Somebody gets blinded in that.
The Birds by Alfred Hitchcock. Bert obviously
Psycho.
Was disbarred. Psych. I mean, it's so... Ugh. Bert would go on to work as a paralegal, and he would denounce corruption in courts, which, let's be honest, I think he was the one perpetrating a lot of corruption. In 1987, Linda was interviewed, and she would say about her marriage, she goes, I think it's probably as good as most, probably better. Ooh, romance. And here's the thing. I wish I could tell you that Bert was a changed man, but I cannot tell you that because in 1996.
Tell me that he met a new girl and that he blinded her.
Basically. I mean, I'm going to say spoiler alert.
What?
In 1996, it comes out that he has been seeing a 42-year-old mistress for 5 years. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He tells her he's going to divorce his wife. He lied. And when she leaves, he calls her. He's like, I'm going to blind you like I did Linda. He's like, if I can't have you, no one will. Same fucking playbook. He's like,
it worked the first time. Why would he learn a lesson?
What's fucking crazy is this mistress tells the DA, they file a case against him. It's in Queens. At the trial, do you know who testifies as a character witness for him?
His wife, Linda.
She's and like, you know what she says? She goes, he
it's
wouldn't
not that bad
hurt
to get blinded.
She says, he wouldn't hurt a fly. He'd hurt his love. He'd hurt his partner, but he wouldn't hurt a fly. He takes care
here,
of
ma'am,
Linda.
To determine whether the fly is in danger.
She's sitting up there blinded by this man saying he wouldn't hurt a fly. Fucking. In this documentary, the two of them are interviewed, and it's so fucking vile because he's sitting there smug about this affair. And she's like, yeah, if he cheated on me again, I'd leave him. Maybe, I think. What is happening?
Blind him.
Yes, this is where Eye for an Eye actually feel like would be great.
The phrase should have come from this.
He was convicted of a lesser degree of second degree harassment, which he beats the more serious charges in that case. The two of them are a part of a book that was written called A Very Different Love Story. In 2013, Linda dies at the age of 75. In 2020, December 24th, Christmas Eve 2020, Bert dies in Queens at the age of 93. In his will, he had $18 million, and all of that money was left to his caregiver, which is this 53-year-old Shimin Frawley. Now, what's interesting is that this will was under contest or a petition, whatever it is, where they're like, I don't know. No. Why is it all going to your caretaker? Because apparently he disinherited several friends and he had planned to give a foundation for the visually impaired that he had established for his wife when she died. He was supposed to give $10 million to that foundation and $5 million to the caregiver, who he was living with at the time of his death in Flushing. And then all of a sudden he died and he's like, actually, all the money goes to the caregiver. And the foundation is like, but your wife who you blinded.
I have so many questions, not the least of which is you have $18 million and you live in Flushing.
Well, he lived with his girlfriend because she was a caretaker and he needed someone to take care
of
him.
Y'all can live anywhere. You know that, right? Like, you could go to spend your final days in Nice. Like, what's he doing in Flushing?
The will was changed, obviously, pretty close to his death. And so lawyers are like, we're convinced that this caretaker who identified her on the death certificate as his spouse conspired with her estranged husband, a former police officer, to coerce him into altering his will after he was incapacitated by a stroke. But her lawyer is like, since 2016, she was the very last love of his life. So there's a bunch of challenges on the estate. I don't know what's happening with it. I don't think we care. I mean, if you're interested, there is an insane documentary called Crazy Love, of which I think is an appropriate name for this story.
Of which Carrie was forced to watch and we all benefited.
Anyway, that is the story of Bert and Linda. May a love like theirs never find me.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIREST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
My story is from Men's Health, Charlotte Observer, San Francisco Gate, and the Today Show. We'll start with the character, who is a real person, believe it or not, this is true crime, of Lee Wainscott. It's her 40th birthday, Carrie. She's at work. She's a single mom with three kids. And they call her to the front of the building she works in, and two cops are there, and they're like, hey, do you know this guy? And they show her a picture of her boyfriend, John Zorn, who she's been with for a couple of months. And she's like, yeah, that's my boyfriend, John. And they're like, yeah, about that. So he is an escaped convict. He's on America's Most Wanted list. He's very dangerous, and his name is not John Zorn. It's Jeffrey Manchester. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. And she's like, this.
Blows. Do they really sing happy birthday to her?
No. Can you imagine? They should have, though. Like, somebody needs to. This poor it's woman. Funny.
I think with notes, I'm going to say that as someone who's receiving some notes lately, is I think a compliment sandwich is a nice thing.
Yeah. Give a compliment sandwich. You look gorgeous. Your boyfriend's a convict. Those shoes seem comfortable. I'm bad at compliments. You can tell. You can tell. That's why I don't give compliments. I could give this woman any compliments because she's in my imagination only, and I still was judging her shoes. Jeffrey Allen Manchester was born in Sacramento in 1971. Totally normal childhood by all accounts. He joined the U.S. Army, and he was in the elite paratrooper division, which sounds extra cool. Elite. He marries super young when he's 20 years old, and he has three kids. And in 1999, they moved to the Bay Area military housing. I don't know what happens or any details around this. I do know that there was some sort of domestic disturbance call made, and that after this goes down, at some point, his wife leaves him. So now he's lost his wife and his kids. You know, I imagine he is not feeling great about himself. And that's when he gets in the old robbery business. He ends up robbing around 40 restaurants, mostly McDonald's. And he makes around $100,000 over the course of the next couple of years. What his modus operandi is to drill holes into the ceiling and jump in the roof like a paratrooper. Because that's what he knows, right?
Yeah.
So he's got his gun, and he'll paratroop on into the restaurant, and then he'll gather all the employees, and he'll be like, hey, you guys, sorry. I know. Could you please pass me the money in the register? Thank you so much. Thank you. And when I say this, I'm not lying. He says...
He's, like, very kind to these
minds
people.
Minds his P's and Q's. Minds his P's and Q's.
Okay.
Gets them all together, puts them in the old walk-in fridge...
Ooh, chilly.
And he's like, it's so cold. I know. Oh, total bummer. I'm going to call when I leave. Someone will come get you. Don't panic. Puts them on in and makes sure that he informs somebody of the crime so that they'll go and get these folks out of the fridge. He gets the moniker of the roof man because it's coming through the roof. So he's hitting all these North California joints. And
is this about the new movie coming out? The Roof
it
Man?
It is. Yeah.
Great.
Based on a true story. So he doesn't just hit up Northern California, Oregon, Nevada, Virginia, Massachusetts. And one of the 18-year-old employees recalls him coming in and says, it was really scary. You know, he was looking through the barrel of a gun and he said, I knew he could kill us if he wanted to. So I think that's another angle to remember here is that even if your burglar is saying please and thank you, it can be pretty scary. In the year
Nobody loves a gun on them.
Right. So it's been like a year of him robbing joints. And in May of 2000, he tries to hit two McDonald's in a single night, which is pure hubris if this is like the Greek tragedy and we're trying to take a lesson from it. So these are neighboring towns. So he's already made some money in Gastonia. Now he's robbing Belmont. The total of those two robberies is around $8,000. So it's a pretty good deal. Gastonia, he did the night before, and it's now like early in the morning in Belmont. He goes in through the roof, and Elaine Snyder, who is 49 years old, is teaching her young employee, Sean, how to clean bathrooms, something that
we could all use a little help.
Well, Sean's 18. I'm sure he does need to learn how to clean a bathroom. And they hear something behind them, and they turn, and they see this guy in all black with a mask and a gun. And he's like, do you have mace? Do you have an alarm? Do you have, you know, he's just checking. And they're like, no, we don't have that stuff. And he tells everybody to get on the ground and to not do anything stupid. And he puts the gun to Elaine and has her open the safe. He can tell that she's in shock. She's panicked. And so then he starts being like, hey, breathe. Just breathe really slow. Calm down. Okay. And then she gets cash out, puts it in the bag he has. And then she's like, do you want the change in the safe? And he's like, yes, I like quarters. And he takes $420 in quarters, which sounds very heavy if you're trying to make a getaway. I'm just spitballing here. It's seems like, come on. He counts up all the money. This is a great hit. And he should have just called it a day. Suddenly, all these beeps start happening around the store. At first, it sounds like alarms. It's that everything's burning. The apple pies, the sausages, everything they're like cooking for the breakfast rush is burning. Everyone is lying on the ground where he told them to lie. And he tells one of the employees, get up, one of the kids, and he's like, go take out all the burnt food. And then he's like, I'm really sorry, you guys. I'm so sorry. You're good people. I'm a bad guy. I feel really sorry for doing this to you. And the 19-year-olds are like, this is so weird. And then he's like, all right, get in the cooler, get in the walk-in. And they're like, this is very chilly. So he's trying to get them coats and he's putting them in and he jams a lemon slicer in the door frame so they can't get out. And he's like, someone will come let you out soon.
But he has to scream that because it's in the walk-in closet. And so it's really, yes.
So Elaine's looking around at these kids and she's terrified. And one of them hands her some milk. Like in the walk-in, he's like, here, have a milk. Like, bet you wished McDonald's served booze at that moment.
Yeah.
They are able to break down the door after Jeffrey leaves. And that gives him the wrong amount of time to make his typical getaway. They get out. They call the Belmont police. And the police head to that McDonald's. And they see a car in an empty church parking lot. And Jeffrey's walking toward it. And they're like, that could be our guy. They turn on the lights. They call backup. He runs into the woods. They give chase. And he's dropped all his bags, all the money. He's scaling a 6-foot fence to get away from them. But they find him hiding in some shrubs by a water tower in the woods. And on him is his military ID. And so they handcuff him. And he says to the police, you guys did a really good job today. Jeffrey. He's rented a car and they look inside and they find a rifle and they find the stuff he uses to break in, all the tools he uses to carve holes in the roof. They find a road map and they're like, this is our guy. They bring him in and it's not very long. It's only a couple hours. He doesn't ask for a lawyer and he does confess. And he's like, you know, I was just trying to pay bills. I was trying to get stuff for my kids. He's like, I think I got this idea from some news story. I can't remember. I don't know what I was saying. This is so dumb. I've never done anything like this before. I'm not going to do it again. This was dopey. He goes to court and they're like, do you want a plea deal? It'll let you serve 15 to 22 years. And he's like, and they're like, and by the way, you can serve it in California. You'll be close to the family that supposedly you were doing all of this for. And he's like, I don't want a plea deal. I don't feel like I broke in and I robbed them. But you guys are trying to charge me with these really inflated things like kidnapping and assault. And I didn't really like hurt anybody. I was very polite. I'm always very polite. And as the prosecutor says, while he might have been very nice to them, it is still very terrifying to have a gun pointed at you and be ordered into a cooler when you don't know how long you're going to be there. So they find him guilty of not just the theft, but the kidnapping charges. And that brings him up to a 45-year prison sentence for just those two robberies that he did in North Carolina. Forget about all the other robberies. But he's only in prison 4 years. And he's a model prisoner before he breaks out. And then he's got a job in the metal plant. And he does like gets under a car kind of thing and grabs onto it and just leaves with the car out the jail.
Whoa.
Yeah. And then he's like, where am I going to live? And he hitchhikes to Charlotte. And in Charlotte, he's like, you know, I'm going to live in this Toys R Us. And you're like, hey, that sounds fun. Good for you.
Flashback.
There's like kind of this hollowed out area that he can use, and he can steal stuff from both to make it a home.
Make it nice. Yeah.
Yeah. He has Spider-Man sheets.
Cute.
And he steals baby food from the Toys R Us to eat. And he just like sits in his bed and he eats his baby food and he watches DVDs that he probably took from the Circuit City or the Toys R Us. And he works out on the roof. Like he goes on the roof at night and works out and bikes around. And he puts baby monitors all over his room so he can surveil the stores so that he knows if anybody's coming. He's got to like be a part of the community too. So he starts to go out and go to church, and he meets this beautiful woman in church named Lee. Lee just separated from her husband a few months ago, and they have a lot in common. They both have three kids. He does not tell her, however, about his, nor does he tell her his name is Jeffrey and that he's the fucking roof man. He says his name is John Zorn, and he works for the government, and he lives in government housing. And she's like, okie dokie. She is sharing custody with her ex of 15-year-old, 12-year-old, and 9-year-old. And they get to know each other a little more at a singles brunch at a TGI Fridays. And that's when they kind of make it official. Like, let's go out.
See where this goes.
Yeah. So
he's like, I'm looking for a home. I'm looking to get out of the stairwell. He seems
like
a nice guy.
Like, it's a little, well, that part's a little weird because they never go to his place, obviously, because the government housing does not allow guests, nor is he allowed to really discuss the nature of his job, of course. But he does bring her kids all kinds of toys, as you can imagine. It's like, I got lots of toys.
Like, wow, this government housing is so crazy.
Meanwhile,
this government job provides you so many toys.
Well, I gotta tell you, meanwhile, there's this character. A lot of this is from the Charlotte Observer, which was such a great article. It was a three-part article, and it was so funny. And they talk about this from so many great perspectives. One of them is the perspective of this guy, Don Robertson, who is Toys R Us. Yeah, yeah. And he's like, I think there's a ghost.
I like that. So much.
No, he's not he can't be the manager. I think he's 20, Don. He's like a young guy. He's like
the night security.
Yeah, or something. I don't know. He's just a teenager that works there. But he'll go in the morning and he'll be like, there's these weird bike tread marks in the store. I cleaned the floor last night. Like, I mopped. I closed. There weren't bike marks on the floor. So he'd be like, there's a biking ghost?
Yes, that is the option. Yes, that feels more plausible than the roof man.
But also, even, I don't know what Jeffrey was thinking, but there'll even be things like the employees' schedules are changed in the computer system. And he's like, somebody's fucking with the computer. Alarms are getting tripped all the time overnight, but then there's no sign of forced entry. You know what? As a result, let's just like not use the alarms. They're turning off the alarms. And he knows that people steal from Toys R Us, but he just has this feeling that like more things are going missing than usual. And then it's fall 2004, and one of his Don tells people about the ghost, and one of his coworkers comes to him and is like, Don, I found the ghost. And he's like, check this out. And he takes him over to the power wheels and he shows part of the wall that looks finished but is actually fake, like rigged to conceal that there is nothing there. It's a false wall and you can crawl behind it. And they crawl behind it and they find a hideout with this Spider-Man bed sheet on an inflatable pool float, which is the bed. Spider-Man 2 movie poster on the little wall in there.
It's important to make it a home. It's not a house. It's not a
He really did.
It's not he's a house, a, it's a
he's
home.
He's got a Nerf basketball hoop in there. I mean, it's like, this looks fun, but for them, they're like, this is a homeless person and they're living in Toys R Us, and at least we figured it out. And somehow, although I'm not sure how, Jeffrey knows they figured it out. Oh, must be his baby monitors that he has everywhere. Anyway, he figures it out, so he just moves to a different part of the building. Like, the building's big and the Circuit City is like out of business. So it's... he can find a lot of different places. So he just moves to a different part. And later that fall, all these video games go missing and they're like, oh, a robbery. But it's like, no, it's the same guy whose Spider-Man hideout you found. He just moved. Meanwhile, Lee's still dating him. What a nice guy. And
where is he showering?
There's so many questions. Probably at her place. Or like, you know, I think about it. You could go to a truck stop. But he's not getting caught doing anything too weird. Except that he doesn't have a car. And I don't know how walkable Charlotte is. So that's a little odd. And she's like, you should get a car. And he's like, should I? And she's like, yes. Let's go to this used car dealership. And he's like, great. So they go, pick out a car. He pays for it in cash. And then he's like, of course. Because, like, what cards does John Zorn, the fake
person, where is he getting
have?
All this cash?
He's still robbing. He must be. I mean, he's got to still be robbing. Or he hid cash all over the place maybe before being in jail. I don't know. But he has cash. And then when he goes to buy the car, he's like, you know, let's put it in your name. Which feels like a really commitment-y big move, but also is because John
hey
Zorn
guys,
is not a name
flag.
You can have the car under. So he's
if
like, let's put it under
your name.
If someone
is buying a car and it's under her name, but it's his use, something is, listen to the gut. Listen to the gut.
I don't know. But also he's wacky. He showed up at one of the Christmas parties, the neighborhood Christmas parties, in a bunny suit, which again, I'm like, this guy is having fun living at Toys R Us.
He's having fun.
Yeah. He also has taken her kids to the Toys R Us and been like, pick something out, I'll buy it for you. So he's still patronizing the Toys R Us as well, which we love to see. It's Christmas and he gave all the kids a bunch of toys from Toys R Us. He gave the pastor at the church a box set of Seinfeld, which he was like, wow, that's a really nice gift. I can't wait to thank him in church tomorrow. But guess who's not in church the day after Christmas? Jeffrey does not come to church because he decided to rob his own damn house. Jeffrey, he's already in there, I guess. It's
wait,
just
wait,
so convenient
to rob
located.
His. What do you mean? He decided to rob his own house. What do you mean?
Toys R Us. He decides to rob them, not like just of merch, but like do
a robbery.
And it's like, don't shit
after Christmas.
You
know what it is? He got the idea from Home Alone because they make so much money on Christmas Eve. And so there's a lot of cash in the store and the banks are closed. And so he's like, I've heard the Wet Bandits. I heard a Marvin and a Harry do this. This is a great idea.
Maybe he watched that. He was just watching movies all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
So he poses as a uniformed police officer and he goes in and there's a sheriff's deputy working off duty, takes her gun, puts it to her head, tells her, get on the ground, I'm going to kill you. Oh, and while he's trying to conduct this robbery, two of the people that work in the store get away and run, which totally obviously throws him. He's trying to get money from the safe that the manager opened, and he's like, shit. So he runs out the back of the door, and because they have a lot of the alarms off, there's no alarm that goes off. And then they're like, oh, maybe he's still inside. When the police come, they're like, yeah, he could still be inside because the alarm didn't go off. So let's really look at him. So even though he really did run away, they again find another secret passageway. There's some plywood. They pull it aside and they go in and it's in the walls of the Toys R Us in the abandoned Circuit City. And they find a really small makeshift area that he's been living in. It's really small. It's like 4x10 and this is under the stairs. And it looks like the hideout that Dawn had found, but it's a children's size mattress instead of a pool float, which feels like he kind of took it up a notch. Still, he's got his Spider-Man sheets, obviously. And it was made, I loved this detail. You know how he was in the army? The bed was made like military, like perfectly, you know, like quarters, creased. He's again, he's decorated. He's got action figures everywhere, DVD player, a bunch of DVDs. He's watching Spider-Man 2, Matchstick Men, 40 Days and 40 Nights. Those are what he's up to. The monitors are back. It's just the same. Like he's reset up his whole hideout there. And he has a workout journal and cleaning wipes to sanitize things, baby food, candy. He even has teeth whitening trays. He's in there doing
self-care is important for everyone, guys. Self-care is important.
They get his prints and they're like, this person is the person that broke out of jail, Jeffrey. Now we have to find him. Let's show people his picture because we know what he looks like. Townspeople are like, what? John Zorn? And they're like, no, Jeffrey Manchester, but sure.
We said Jeffrey Manchester.
John are you Zorn? Deaf? And they're like, that guy showed up in church a few months ago. He's really nice. Are you sure? And they're like, yeah, yeah, we're sure. And they're like, well, he's got a girlfriend. You should talk to her. That leads us to Lee's 40th birthday party where the cops are the guests and they're telling her all about what's up. Uninvited
guest, tacky.
And they're like, hey, are you planning to see him for your 40th birthday? And she's like, yeah, he's taking me out to dinner tonight. And they're like, yeah, so we're going to need you to totally betray him. And she's like, fuck, okay. I mean, she's like, this guy, when she finds out he has three kids and like she has three kids, I well, think yeah. that is probably the biggest, whoa, fuck you. I didn't know you at all. You've been totally lying to me.
Yeah.
And there's a feeling of, this guy was around my family. I put my kids maybe in danger. I think it feels really bad. He calls her, or she calls him on behalf of the police to be like, what time are you picking me up? And makes the plan. They take the kids out of the house and put them in a safe location. She's not even at home. They have her somewhere else in the hood in a car, safe as well. And they start to track him as he approaches the home because they're scanning the neighborhood and they see him in his car. And suddenly he pulls a U-turn and they're like, oh, man, he knows. Oh, fuck. OK. But they follow him. And what he does is drive into a grocery store parking lot and go in and come out with a bouquet of flowers. He parks outside of her house and starts to walk up. And that's when they grab him. He goes completely without a fight. She's nearby, blocked down, and can hear all of it. And the cops are saying to Jeffrey, what's your name? And he turns to them and goes, you know what my name is. And they say, yeah, but we'd like to hear you say it. She goes home. She's reunited with her kids. She's devastated. And her kids, who have been taken from the home to be safe, are like, what is going on? And she's just so sad. Cops are searching their home with the kids in it. It's, I think it must be really alarming for everybody.
Yeah.
And he asked the cops, Jeffrey, can I talk to Lee? And they're like, yeah, if she wants to talk to you, you can talk to her. So they ask Lee and she's like, yeah, put him on. And he's like, please, please, please don't be mad at me. And he's like apologizing and so sad. This just must be so hard for her because I get that we contain multitudes and that we've got this person that she doesn't know this man at all. But at the same time, I imagine there is
probably a did part have real of, feelings for
and
him.
And there's a part of Jeff that has not... real feelings. He does real feelings for her. And it also feels like he's such a nice guy. If that makes any sense.
It's one of the, yeah, he's like a real anti-hero. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's a real.
And Yeah, it reminds me of Task, if anybody's watched that show yet, on HBO with
Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, not Mark Ruffalo's character. There's another character in it, super hot, by the way. But it reminds me of that, yeah, the anti-hero, but you're like, I love you anyway. I can't help it. And I see how you got a little bit mixed up, but you're still have a good heart. And I think that part of the way they got Lee is that they were telling her, he's for sure on his way out. Like, he's going to flee because he hit this Toys R Us and almost got caught. He's going to flee now, and now we've made him. So it was also a feeling of a pre-abandonment. Yeah. He's going to leave me anyway. I don't know. She's not doing well. She's staying home from work and really just really taking herself out of life for a minute. And she misses the pastor's speech the next day, Sunday, after Jeffrey was taken into custody. The pastor made a speech the following Sunday in church about the sin of betrayal and the virtue of forgiveness. And it was all about this guy they all thought they knew, John Zorn. And Lee does go visit Jeffrey once for closure. And then her
and they're together.
The car that
if
they
it's ha- my that story, they got together. Back together, and she.
Well, so the car that they got together is making a weird noise, and she goes in to get the ventilation system checked out, and they find the car guy calls her, is like, "You better come in." She comes back to the car shop, and he's like, "I found this gun in the ventilation." She's like,
"Right,
yeah, I really right. did not know this person." Yeah. And they find out that they are able to connect that he had broken into a pawn shop before he did the robbery. That's why he got the gun to do the robbery. They also connect him to a dentist's office nearby because those teeth whitening trays
yeah.
say a certain dentist's office name on them. And right. that certain dentist's office had a fire pretty recently. And they realize that he maybe went in to see that dentist to get something done and to get the teeth whitening stuff. And then was like, "I got to burn it down because they have my dental records."
Wow.
So he's convicted. He's in a maximum security prison now, harder to escape.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hypothetically, he would be released in 2036 at 65 years old. Still quite young. Quite a young guy still. And now they're doing this movie, Roofman, about it. And Channing Tatum plays Jeffrey. And Kirsten Dunst plays Lee. And the director was talking about how he wanted to hear from Jeffrey himself, so he'd call him. And then they got into this habit of Jeffrey would call him 4 times a week, and he told him he was, like, thought of him as his shrink. And Channing Tatum says when he read the script, he thought, this cannot be true, but it is. And he had all these questions about things he wanted to know from Jeffrey to play the part. And he said, as soon as you get on the phone with him, he's just the most warm. I mean, he spent 9 years in solitary confinement, but you talk to this guy and he's like, he kind of takes care of you on the phone. He really does. He's optimistic. He has all these dreams and plans when he gets out. And that's so interesting to me, the whole thing. And it's funny that he won't be able to see the movie.
I bet they'll do a fun screening in prison.
You kind of hope they will for him. There's little things.
But also, I wonder if any of
Jeffrey.
The money. I wonder if he has to pay any restitution.
Restitution. Interesting. I don't know about
that. For like all of the thefts. Like, could you imagine him like signing away his life rights if he gets to profit off of that?
Oh, I don't. Well, there's laws against that. You can't profit off your crimes. So he will not be able to. But he would be able to leave at 65, write a book, and profit off the book, I think. I think it's that, I don't know what the law is.
Well,
I'm pretending to know.
Interesting.
But I'm making it up as I go.
Interesting. Interesting
story. And I finished it at 10:59, and I have to be in my IFS training at 11.
Hey, thanks for being here. We'll talk to you soon, team.
Later.
Bye.